Thanks very much. Okay, off we go. So here are my potential conflicts of interest. Robin Richardson, my co-author, doesn't have any. Thanks for unrestricted funding from the Balmes Foundation and Gilead Sciences that supported part of this work. And thanks to Janaki Amin and Fred Lee, who worked on previous sort of data sets used as the core for this work. So we've done an initial antiretroviral efficacy systematic review of all studies commenced between 1994 and 2016 and showed what you'd expect to show, that there was an increase in efficacy by calendar year of initiation shown on the x-axis of the graph. And the lines of best fit are in white, yellow and pink, the week 48 data, the week 96 data and the week 144 data respectively. So by intention to treat analysis, it's clearly improving over time, and you've got about three quarters of patients with an intention to treat efficacy of about 75% at 3 years. Part of the reason this efficacy has improved relates to the reduction in cessation for adverse events. So this is stuff that we've already published earlier this year, showing that at week 48 on the left, week 96 in the centre, and week 144 on the right, that as the calendar year of initiation moved forward, the incidence of cessation for adverse events fell, and each circle here and on the previous graph represents an individual study. What we don't know from that, before I go on to that, Fred published some data a few years ago, also from this data set, showing that the sort of major clinical adverse events, such as death and AIDS, from these initial studies were quite underreported. That included studies initiated up until 2011. We don't know which studies report and which studies don't report, and we haven't looked prior to this at individual adverse events that may be common causes of treatment interruption, things like nausea, diarrhea, headache, etc. If you've got incomplete reporting, that raises the possibility of reporting bias, which hasn't been evaluated before. So if there is no reporting bias, if say half the studies report an adverse event and half don't, if there's no reporting bias, then there should be no risk factors for reporting of those adverse events. And the antiretroviral cessation rate should be the same in studies that do or don't report AE data. And if that's a very sort of tricky notion to digest, it's taken me a year or two and I'm still not sure I'm there. So hopefully the figures will clarify this. So the aim of this analysis was to evaluate AE reporting completeness and potential reporting bias in initial antiretroviral studies commenced from 94 through to 2015, with the four major clinical outcomes of death, AIDS, serious non-AIDS and serious adverse events analysed, and the five most common adverse events reported in studies: nausea, diarrhea, headache, rash and fatigue. Not only did we collect the adverse event data, but we collected data on study design, eligibility, participants and the types of antiretroviral therapy. We analysed by treatment group rather than by study, because some studies reported adverse outcomes for one group but not for the others. And as of today, I've only analysed the week 48 data because there's far less data at weeks 96 and week 144. So the reporting rates are compared using a Fisher's exact test. And to look at potential bias, we've done this by assessing if variables associated with AE reporting, yes or no, and we compared the cessation rates between groups that did or did not report incidents, adverse events. So the studies we included were reported from 94 through to July 2017. They were prospective trials of cohorts of initial therapy that had an intention to treat analysis at week 48 or beyond and had at least 20 subjects in a group. We excluded sort of more indiscrete regimens, treatment regimens that were never recommended because of lack of potency in any guideline, and one or two studies of directly observed therapy. The data sources you can see there, and I'd have, as a comment, I'd say that if you relied purely on the publications, you would have got far less data than I'm going to show you here, because a lot of it was in places like product labels, conference websites, or on trial registries like clinicaltrials.gov. So this is an extension of what Fred did, and this graph shows AE reporting at week 48 by groups of years commenced. On the bottom is death, AIDS, serious non-AIDS, and serious adverse events. The yellow column represents the overall reporting for that 22-year period. Blue is 1996 to 2000, green is 01 to 05, pink is 06 to 2010, and white is 2011 to 2015. So death we report about three quarters of groups, AIDS in about 40%, serious non-AIDS, perhaps surprisingly, in only about 30%, and SAEs in a bit less than 60%. And AIDS and serious non-AIDS event reporting has declined substantially over the last decade. In fact, AIDS was reported in no study published since 2011. These are the individual adverse event data. And so the adverse event that was reported most commonly was nausea, which a bit under 50% of groups reported the incidence of nausea. And then it gradually declined to diarrhea, headache, rash, fatigue. You can see by those little stars I've put there that the reporting for some of those adverse events has actually improved in the last 5-year period for 2011 to 2015. So, as I mentioned earlier, if there's no bias, there should be no risk factors for adverse event reporting. And the following three slides will show you that there are a multitude of adverse events that are associated with reporting or not reporting. What I've done here is only show two, otherwise the slide would take up the whole front of the room. And I've chosen nausea to represent the individual adverse events and serious adverse events to represent the more clinical ones. And I've done that because they were reported most commonly. So you perhaps have a better chance of looking for risk factors. So in short, and it's a very consistent message, regardless of which adverse event or which clinical outcome you're looking at, you are more likely to report these adverse events in randomised placebo-controlled trials, phase 2 or 3 versus 4, studies that were industry-sponsored rather than academic-sponsored, we should all pay attention to that, and studies that were recruited in resource-rich settings. And as I said, the bullet point at the bottom in yellow is that if you look at the other clinical outcomes and other adverse events, it's very similar risk factors. Likewise, if you look at the eligibility criteria, studies that had restricted viral load entry criteria, restricted liver function test criteria are also more likely to report adverse event data, and integrase, studies that included an integrase as the anchor drug were also more likely to report. Lastly, if you look at participants, we were more likely to report adverse events in people who were younger, who were white, who didn't have AIDS, who had higher CD4 counts and lower viral loads. So we report adverse events in healthy patients, but we don't report adverse events in less healthy patients. So this is the thing that took me more than a year to sort of grapple with. What I've done here is look at studies that did or did not report an adverse event. So I'll just start here with nausea, yes or no. Reported nausea, did not report nausea. And then I've looked at the cessation rates overall and cessation for adverse events. So for example, studies that reported nausea had an overall treatment cessation rate of 18%. Studies that didn't report nausea had a cessation rate of 25%. Studies that reported nausea had an AE cessation for adverse events of about 5.5%, and it was 8.5% if they didn't. So in other words, we're also reporting we're reporting adverse events in a select population of studies of groups. So if we look now at the other adverse events, it tells a very similar message in that cessation overall and cessation for adverse events was lower in studies where we reported these individual adverse events and was higher where we didn't report them. So that says to me that what we're doing is giving a biased impression because we only report these studies where the toxicity was less. As a sort of sensitivity analysis, this bottom half of the slide looks at cessation for other reasons, so non-toxicity. So there's a bit of a signal for a couple of the adverse events with virological failure, but there's no relationship to cessation for subject choice or for other reasons, that usual mixed bag of other reasons. So it does seem to be confined to adverse events. So in conclusion, the major adverse outcomes and specific adverse events in adults on initial therapy are underreported, particularly from phase 4 academic-sponsored cohorts. Reporting of some AEs has improved over the last 5 years, but reporting of AIDS and serious non-AIDS has declined. The week 48 data that are reported are biased towards groups with healthier participants that experience fewer SAEs, less ART discontinuations, so the true AE rates are probably higher than reported. There's too few data, I think, to permit an analysis at weeks 96 and 144, and perhaps the take-home message that is that adverse event reporting should be mandatory. Thanks for your attention.